Welcome to the Busy Leaders Podcast, a catalyst for inspired action, a high-energy, high-fun podcast hosted by Quint Studer. In each high-impact segment, Quint chats with the individuals on how they're navigating today's environment. Quint and his guests showcase best practices and how they work in different contexts. You'll often walk away with tactical tools and tips that you can apply to your own role, business, community, and life. I'm Nicole Webb-Bodie, the Chief Impact Officer at Studer Family of Companies. Quint is a well-known healthcare operator, author, coach, and mentor to many. He has dedicated the last 3 decades to creating tools and techniques that make healthcare a better place for physicians to practice medicine, patients to receive care, and employees to work. He has written numerous books, articles, and his work is always based on evidence, research, and tools and techniques. For more information and to listen to previous podcasts, visit thebusyleadershandbook.com/podcast. If you're interested in learning about our upcoming events, both virtual and in person, visit healthcareplussg.com. When times are tough, or even when they're not, culture is everything. In this podcast, Quint talks to Bob Page and Tammy Peterman, executives at the University of Kansas Health System and co-authors of the book, Proud But Never Satisfied, 10 Transformative Actions for Healthcare Systems. The academic health system has had quite a journey of transformation. In 1997, they had the lowest patient satisfaction ranking in the nation. Now, for over a decade, they've been nationally ranked as one of the best hospitals in America by U.S. News & World Report. Bob and Tammy talk about how their emphasis on culture has helped them sustain these results. It created a strong foundation and the consistency to get through some really tough patches over the years, most recently COVID-19. And they believe culture will carry them through the future. Listen in as Bob and Tammy provide a few insights. Now here's your host, Quint Studer, and Bob Page and Tammy Peterman.
Well, this is Quint Studer. Thank you for joining me on the podcast. And gosh, I don't want to talk about how old, because the other day somebody said, well, Quint, you've been in healthcare so long. And I said, can you word that in a little different way than so long? But Bob and Tammy, I've known you for so long. And what's really wonderful is I've watched what you've done at the University of Kansas Health System. And I don't want to say, maybe I'm wrong, but I remember when I first met you two, I wasn't sure the future of the University of Kansas Health System was that strong. I don't think it was that sustainable. And I think there were concerns about what it was and what it was going to be, if anything. There was a lot of challenges in for the system financially, operationally, structurally. You name it, you had the challenge. And then I was there right before the pandemic, and I was saying to you before we went on the air is, and it's almost like you need more wall space, because everywhere I went, it was U.S. News World Report, top this, top that, top that. The way you, and now we're going to talk about this, the way you visually present your mission, your vision, your values, you just can't help being in one of your facilities and not understanding exactly what you represent and what you're all about. So I'm going to ask some very specific questions. But first of all, when you look back, Bob and Tammy, and you look at it, what are your own thoughts? Do you believe what you've done? Can you say, glad we didn't set a goal because we've done better than we thought? I mean, what's the journey been like for you? And I know you have a book that you wrote a couple of years ago that I did a webinar on. Talk a little bit for the people about a journey that you went from, I wouldn't call it good to great, because I don't think you'd call it good. Wherever you went to great.
Why don't you start this? You always start this, and I can jump in.
Well, you know, Quint, as a Cub fan, you've got this eternal optimism, right? So 1908 to 2016, that's 108 years is what it was. So, you know, for me, it's a pinch me moment. Right. When I first got here, I wasn't sure I knew that much about the organization. And yet to think about what we've accomplished, I think there's a lot of us that have a chip on our shoulder because people said we wouldn't be able to do this. And it's not about what Tammy and I have done. It's about the opportunity to put together a great team of people and stay focused and all believe in there's only one reason we come to work every day, and that's to take great care of patients. And so to watch that trajectory over time, and it's kind of like what we were talking about a little bit before we got on the air, is that despite all of that success, we're still not where we want to be, right? I mean, with a vision to lead the nation, you're not there yet. And so it is, it's truly been just a one of the joys of my life to be part of this team, to have seen what we've been able to accomplish and yet still excited about what's left to accomplish.
You know, Quint, I think sometimes when we look back over the last 20 years, first of all, it's been a pretty remarkable journey. And I think that journey has been so important because it's what has solidified in my mind is that it's all about people. At the end of the day, you can do almost anything if you have the right people focused on the right things, supported in the best and right way. And we've actually proven that over the course of the last 20 years to be one of the organizations that, as you described, might not have even been in existence when we were talking about this in the late 90s, early 2000s, to where we are today. It's a significant difference. And it's really all about the fact that we had the right vision, which was to lead the nation in caring, healing, teaching, and discovering. We had the right people. We had the right people focused on the best and right things. And it was focused on the patient. We had this formula that we are sticking to because it has worked for us, which is a focus on quality, a focus on service, making sure you have the right people. If you have those things in line, the growth and sustainability will be a whole lot easier. You still have to focus on growth and sustainability, but you have the right decision-making when you focus on people from a patient perspective and employee perspective.
Well, I'm already going to go off script right off the bat. I've only been talking for like 2 minutes. Bob, Tammy, almost every healthcare executive says people, and all of them say people. Yet if you look at employee engagement results, if you look at great resignation, if you look at quitting while you're still working, some people are going to say, well, they just say that, people. But you've been saying it forever, but you've been living it. So tell me, you put in a formula. And you sort of introduced it a little bit, Tammy, a little while ago. Talk to me about how do your employees know you're walking the talk?
I think, Quint, a couple examples that come to mind. One, let's go back to March of 2020. Actually, I think it was April of 2020. We had our first COVID patient in March. April, we lost money in April. And the first thing Tammy and I did was we came down to this studio and we announced that we would not lay off or furlough any employees. We had no idea how long this pandemic was going to last. We had no idea what impact it would have on our financials overall, but we knew that we couldn't do this without our team. And while everybody was really scared to death about everything they heard and everything they read, we needed to put them all at ease about their work, that we were going to continue to pay people. Nobody had to worry about losing their job. We needed everybody here. Fast forward to a month ago, you know, Quint, we've had a pretty rough year so far. For the 7 months of this calendar year, we've lost money in four of those 7 months. And yet it was just last month that we came out and announced basically an across-the-board increase for almost every employee we have here. And again, you know, you look at these organizations that are losing money and what's the first thing they do? They look to cut staff. They look to reduce FTEs. And I think we've walked the talk by doing exactly the opposite during some really rough financial times.
I also think, Quint, it's really important to recognize the value of the entire team. So when great things happen at our place, you mentioned U.S. News and World Report, we are quick to give the entire team, everyone credit for that, whether they are the frontline care providers or they are people who are supporting our care providers, everyone contributes to that team. And we have great celebrations. We had a fabulous celebration when we announced U.S. News and World Report top hospital rankings. We also had an ice cream party for everybody in the entire organization. So celebrating sometimes with really small little things like an ice cream sundae is just the way to say thank you to every individual in our organization. We believe in the power of celebration and recognition, and we do that as much as we can, but it's to the entire team.
Well, let me get again off script completely, because you're always so far ahead of the game with people and training and development. You've always were a leader in investing in your managers, because I think, as you say, Tammy and Bob, it's all about people. And, you know, one of the things I've talked about for the last year is this thing that people don't leave their job, they leave their boss is no longer true. People can love their boss and still leave. People leave for lots of reasons. There's lots of challenges, and so on. So with many organizations, we've gotten this period that you couldn't help training was sort of stopped or paused, backed off. I don't know about you, but you probably have a number of new people in management positions. I've heard anything from 20 to 50% in organizations. You've always been cutting edge. I mean, you've always, like you said, Bob, sometimes gone different than other people, and it's won. What are you doing? And again, this again, completely, as you know, weren't expecting this. What are you doing with your management team now, your leaders in the area of training and development? Because it seems like that's been one of your great strengths. And most organizations are really struggling with how do we do that? How do we catch up? Because we could overwhelm these new managers if we throw too much at them. Have you done anything in this arena?
I think there are a couple things, but one that I think is really important is just making sure they have the information that they need to lead their team. We just came from our leadership meeting. We've had a leadership meeting every other Monday since we do it at 1 o'clock. And if there happens to be a holiday on the Monday, we do it on Tuesday. And we've done that every year since 1999, or every other Monday since 1999, which is pretty remarkable. And the agenda's very consistent. We always review our scorecard. We make sure everyone in the organization, regardless of where you're leading, people need to know how we're doing. What's our patient satisfaction? How is it on the inpatient? How is it on the ambulatory areas? What are we doing in terms of people? What about quality? How are we doing financially? We review our scorecard. We go over a number of different details related to each one of those areas. And I think that's part of leadership development. I think leaders need to know how the organization is doing and what we expect of them in terms of sharing that information with their teams. That's something that's been very consistent in our organization.
Yeah, and Quinn, I would add to that. I think it's not as much about training programs as it is what Tammy talked about. It's also about consistency. And so I go back to when we first met you. I think it might have been 1998, 1999. And back then, we came out of the gates with three metrics: service quality and cost. Those were the three metrics. And over time, we've now added people and growth to that. But we've stayed consistent with that. And so I think sometimes when you're a leader, if you've got senior execs that are changing every other day, and it's the flavor of the month, or it's the, I read this new article, or I listened to this new podcast, and now I'm going to turn left, and tomorrow I'm going to turn right. I think one of the things we've been successful at here is to stay the course. There was a great story about Jack Welch when he was leading GE, and somebody chronicled his annual presentations to his team over the course of 15 or 20 years, whatever the time frame was. And they said the only thing that changed in the essence of his message was his appearance. The message stayed consistent throughout that. And I think, Tammy, we've used the same set of expectations. And so to us, it's not all about let's get to the next class and let's give you the KU way. It's let's be consistent so people don't have any question. What's the vision? Where are we going? What are we going to measure for success? And how are we going to help you get there?
I think that's a great point. I see it all the time, you know, especially when new leaders come in, all of a sudden they throw everything out. And then employees are felt like, why should I believe you? Because you're not going to follow through. You're not going to be consistent. And I think consistency is really vital. Let me ask another question. By the way, there's not one question I've asked them that they were prepared for, because I'm once again into this, I got excited because I like to learn. I'm always wanting to learn from these. So I'm being selfish now, asking these two great leaders to teach me growth. If you could, when you look at growth, and one of the things I see is we know there's lots of mergers, consolidations, a lot of things going on in healthcare. But one of the things I've always noticed is, how do you hold quality and growth, and how do you hold consistency? And this isn't a healthcare story, but this is a story I read one time. Dick's Sporting Goods. Dick's Sporting Goods grew and grew and grew, and then it stopped growing. And they asked the founder of Dick's Sporting Goods, what happened? He said, I overthrew my management talent. And so as you talk a little bit about the secrets, and talk about where you were 20-something years ago, where you're at today, and how you've managed to not only hold, but improve quality throughout this journey.
You want to do the before story?
I'll do the, you know, Quinn, this is the fun part. Tammy and I have done this for so many years that I get to do the fun part, which is the bad part. And she'll tell you the good part, and then we'll tell you how we got there. But if you think about it, back in 1998, when we were really struggling, we had a 500-bed hospital with 140 patients. And so, you know, when you do the math and you figure out you got 360 empty beds and you've got more medical students than you have patients, you know there's a real problem, especially when your market is growing. So the market in Kansas City was growing and we were losing volume every year. So it was a pretty sad commentary back then in terms, and we had the experts telling us in the adjacent county to us, which is one of the wealthiest counties in Kansas and perhaps in the country, that we were told that people wouldn't leave that county to come to us for their healthcare. And so it's good, I think, for the listeners to understand that's where we started from a growth perspective. We didn't know what growth meant because we kept declining in terms of volume. But Tammy can always fill you in now on why it's a little better now.
Well, I think in terms of where we are, even in terms of inpatient beds, we're now licensed for over 1,000 beds here in the Kansas City area. And we also have hospitals in other areas in the state of Kansas. We've been able to grow. Of course, our volume has grown tremendously. We're taking care of patients from every county in the state of Kansas and nearly every county in Missouri and every state in the country and about 30 countries internationally. That's where our patient population is coming from. And we had 2,200 employees back when Bob was giving those demographics back in the late 90s. And today we have about 14,000 employees. We now have about 1,100 physicians. I think it takes all of them every single day and days we need a whole lot more than that. And right now our census is tremendously high and we're needing to put up another tower because we can't take all of the patients. We're actually turning patients down that we want to be able to take into our organization. So from a growth perspective, we've grown from our inpatient perspective. Now we have a very big campus here in Kansas City at our main location. We also have several other locations in Kansas City. We have two behavioral health hospitals. And we have a lot of ambulatory areas around Kansas City. We have partnerships and collaborations and affiliations with organizations across the state of Kansas. That's been really beneficial to us as well. We have a care collaborative that is in a number of counties in Kansas as well.
Yeah. And you know, Quint, to your question about quality during growth, I think it gets back to what we said before. It's consistency. We've all seen those scorecards, those quality scorecards across the country that have 1,000 metrics on them, you know, and red and green and yellow lights and arrows going up and down, all that kind of stuff. And we asked our patients back in the 90s, what do you want to know? And they said two really important things. We want to know, are we going to have a good experience with you? And are we going to survive? I mean, that was it. And so we picked two big dots. We picked patient satisfaction and risk-adjusted mortality. And sure, we look at all of the, you know, the damage that we do to patients and all the harm we bring to patients. But at the end of the day, our big dots, risk-adjusted mortality. So staying consistent with that metric while you're growing and making sure that you're not losing sight of what your ultimate goal is, I think has been part of that secret sauce. We haven't changed those metrics while we've grown as large as we've become.
We look at risk-adjusted mortality every month, and we actually do mortality reviews. Our teams are very involved in mortality reviews, not from a punitive perspective, but rather from a learning perspective. What can we do differently? What can we do better? That's always what we're trying to do, is how do we do things better? Better for the patients, better for the organization, better for the families. We're also pretty transparent. And we're transparent with patients, we're transparent with our staff, we're transparent with our board. We have a really robust quality committee of our board, and we review all of our focused investigations and any adverse event we review at our board level. And we do an in-depth review and share with them, here's what happened. And we tell them, here's what we learned from this. Here's how we're going to make sure that this doesn't happen again.
You know, Quint, one interesting application of this, and I don't know if this fits or not, but when you think about growth, branding becomes really important. And so if you think about the trajectory we've been on, we're very protective of our brand because we believe our brand means something. And quite frankly, we've given our brand away in a couple of instances, which may, in retrospect, not have been the right thing to do day one. Because when your name is on a building, patients expect that the care that they get when they're with you here is the same level of care they're going to get at all your other facilities. And so we're learning. You know, I mean, it's all, like you said, it's all about learning. We're continuing to learn the importance of brand as it relates to quality, as it relates to growth.
I agree. I think Bob and Tammy, what I've seen is certain large systems create a deal where for a certain dollar amount or for certain, really, really for a certain dollar amount, you can not only use their protocols, but you could put their name on your building, their name on your specialty. But I agree with you. I think unless you know that that's going to be that good as you, it can work against you, and it's not worth the short-term gain for that. And you see it often. And I hadn't thought of that till you. You brought it up. So you have a book out, and I did your webinar years ago on your book. So if I were going to tell people how to purchase your book, and if I purchased your book, what would I read?
I think you'd read stories about our place. It's not a book about either one of us. It's a book about our place and from the people's words who actually had participated in many of the journeys or some of the journey of our organization. We really wanted to make this not just a book about the history of our place, how we've gone from point A to point B, but really like how did it happen? And what are some practical ways that others could really learn from us? And we said, it's probably something that could be used by people outside of healthcare as well.
You know, it's funny, Quint, we've talked about maybe we're going to start to write a second book. And of course, those that helped us write the first one have all of a sudden disappeared. They don't want to have that conversation. But having said all of that, it took us 5 years to pull that together. And as Tammy said, we originally thought we'd do a history book. And then we realized 10 people would like that on their coffee table and that'd be about it. And it was like, well, maybe we did learn some lessons in there. And as we tell everybody, it's our story. It may not work for you, but this is what worked here. And that way it's something that we can at least share with others. Here's what worked here. Maybe it'll help you in your organization, whether you're in healthcare or not, but it sure isn't about us, because if you read that book, it's story after story after story from our own staff and our patients and our physicians telling their aspect of this journey.
We've been on this for like you said, 20 years. What are some of the lessons? I wrote a column this past week, and I talked about my number one recommendation I make to young leaders is be kind to yourself. You know, and I said, I'm not sure I would have made that recommendation years ago. I think life lessons have come in. I have a little more compassion, a little more empathy, a little more understanding. Notice I'm using the word a little more, a little more patient. So what are some of these lessons? You guys are active in MHA programs and all sorts of things. What are some of the lessons that you've learned on this journey?
I think there are a lot of lessons. I think at the end of the day, Quint, our organization is strong and we have sustained some pretty rough patches, but I think it's because the culture was strong and has remained strong. We talk about the pandemic a lot. And I just talked to someone earlier today. I said, I think the reason we were able to do as well as we did during the pandemic is we had a really strong foundation and our culture was consistent. We didn't deviate from it. It's just what Bob said, that we let people know early on, no furloughs, no layoffs. Our people really matter and we're going to need you. And so I think one thing I know for sure is that culture matters. And it matters in an organization, whether it's healthcare or any other organization, the culture has to be right and it has to be consistent. You can't change every month or every year because something new comes out. You have to figure out what the culture should and needs to be in an organization and then stick to it.
You know, Quint, I would add, culture, absolutely. We've actually coined a phrase now, guardians of the culture, because culture really has gotten us where we are, and we believe it's the right culture to carry us into the future. The other thing I think that we've learned is that leadership's a team sport. It's pretty easy when you've been in an organization like this to watch all the success and to let it go to your head. I mean, more and more people come up to both of us and go, what a great job you've done and all this kind of stuff. And the reality is neither of us would be here if it weren't for the team of people we get a chance to work with. And I think as leaders, you really have to check the ego at the door, because there are so many opportunities for your ego to go totally unchecked and to be the one in front of the camera every chance you get. And instead, truly believe that if what you do is spend your time recognizing the people who have gotten this organization where it is, I think that's a really big lesson for leaders. You know, there really isn't a place for narcissism in leadership.
Well, there might not be a place, but there's certainly a lot of people in it sometimes. So I'm with a little of that. So there's not a place. Some people find a seat bus here with narcissism. And I agree with you on one of the big wake-up calls I had as a leader was when I was years ago working at Holy Cross Hospital and we won an award. And of course, I was excited about going and accepting this award with the executive team. And our CEO, Mark Clement, said, well, we're not going. I'm saying, well, what do you mean we're not going? He said, well, we're going to have like a contest and employees are going to go and they're going to accept the award. And, you know, it was a contest and some of the people had never flown that went to get this award. But man, was that a lesson for me. You know, it's easy to talk it, but then you have to walk it. And I've learned so much from Mark. I've learned so much from you and Tammy over the years on that. And I would agree with you. You can tell your culture when times are rough, because that's when cultures crack. That's when people fall apart because the stress, it's not consistent. So I know you're so gracious with your time. You get, as a CEO calls you, what are some of the big concern I hear from CEOs is what you guys have already, and both of you are in CEO roles, is, wow, we're losing money. Like you said, we're really hurt right now. Our financials are down. And if you go to some of the publications in healthcare, what we're reading about are layoffs, cutbacks, less. How do you handle your board through that? Because your board has certain. Tell us about, I haven't asked this, I think, ever on this podcast. You know, you might think it sounds good to the employees, but you've got a board, you've got bond ratings, you've got debt financing. I would imagine all the growth you've had, you've got a little bit of debt in your organization. How have you managed the board through some of this decision-making process?
I think that's a great question. First of all, we have an amazing board, and our board really knows and understands the difference between governance and management. They expect management to manage, and they expect management to share the performance, and they expect us to perform, if you will. I think that before you even get to the board, though, one of the things I was sitting here as you were saying, gosh, so many organizations are losing money right now. How do you do all of this? Well, I'll tell you, when we were putting our budget together, we had a pretty significant budget gap. In order for us to put a budget together that had any kind of a margin, we had to make some decisions and we had to make some changes in terms of what we were putting into that budget. And we did what we always do. We went to our team and we said, we need to figure out ways we can reduce expense and we need to figure out ways we can appropriately increase revenue. How are we going to do this? Our team was great. They came up with many tactics. We're now working on those. Things are things that we should have been working on and had been working on quite honestly earlier. We said, if we do these things, we'll be able to sustain and we'll be able to meet our budget targets. So we put those initiatives together with the help of a team. That didn't happen in Bob's office or my office. That happened with an entire team. We then shared those with our board to let them know we have a plan. It's not been a great year so far financially during the calendar year, but here's our plan for fiscal year 23. And now we're tracking those every few weeks. We meet with the executive leader of each one of those initiatives so that we can make sure we are making progress on each one of those tactics. Once again, it's about the power of the team.
You know, Quint, Tammy's right. We've got this unbelievable board. And my experience, at least, is that I think boards are looking for results. And when they have confidence in leadership, it allows them to stay at the governance level and not in the management level. And so we've been, as I said, consistency has been really important, and they've watched the success out of that consistency, which has not been on how do we do this on the backs of our people. So great story about Tammy here. So one year we needed to take somewhere between $50 to $70 million out of our operating expenses. So we did what everybody does. We brought in a couple of consulting firms for their dog and pony show. And the firm we selected, literally the principal's at one end of the table, Tammy's down on the side, and she looks at this gentleman and says, let me be really clear. We need to take $50 to $70 million out, and you cannot touch our people. Now, because we all know how those consultants were, they come in and the first thing they do is they slash and burn and they get rid of these FTEs and they do that. And if you could have seen the eyes of these consultants, just kind of like, so you expect us to deliver this with your team without touching people? And you know what? They did, because we had the people engaged in the process. So I guess the message is, when you've had success focusing on your people and you've got the right board of directors, they're going to be all in on that process and that philosophy.
I think, Bob and Tammy, it's consistent with the word consistency. No, we haven't said this word trust, but I really think what you've done there is created a culture of trust. And that's sort of your brand, is trust. People know the safety they're going to get. They know the quality they're going to get and the experience they're going to get. And I saw this. I'm on a board of a healthcare system in Ohio, and their CEO, Bob, like you and Tammy, have done a great job building trust with the board, and he's been consistent. So when he comes to the board and says, hey, we're going to have some pretty tough months, but here's what we're going to be doing, the board's actually almost very understanding, very compassionate with that. And as you've talked this whole time, I've thought about the tremendous trust that you've put into it. So let me ask you one last question as we wrap up here is, succession planning. This was another thing that wasn't on the script, but you know, you've been, I mean, this is like, you might say, and I know you don't on purpose make this a Bob and Tammy show, but there's going to be people that say, wow, I knew what it was like before they got here. I know it was like when they first got here, and I know what it's like now, and change is inevitable. How are you building for the future with your team that when you and Tammy, Bob, you and Tammy, or Tammy, you and Bob might not be there? How are you building the succession for your organization?
I think one of the things that we've worked hard at, not just the two of us, but certainly leaders within our organization, and I'll get back to culture again. I think if you have the right culture, you have the right people who protect that culture, just as we do. The culture will remain the same after we leave, because I believe we have the right people in leadership positions throughout our organization. It's never about one person or two. And if it is, things don't go well when they leave. And I totally believe it's not about one person, two or three. This is about our organization. And I believe that we have leaders throughout our entire organization who have the same passion for this organization and for the culture of this organization. And I believe they will be guardians of this culture when we're not here anymore.
You know, Quint, I think to tag onto that, I think there's two pieces to that question, right? One is, what are we doing to develop the next generation of leaders? We're both the beneficiaries of being internally promoted. And so I think we take it on as our responsibility to make sure we've identified future leaders. And we're working right now. We've already got a list that we've worked on. And what are the developmental opportunities for those folks? And so that's through the help of our board. And succession planning is probably not a strength of healthcare. It's probably a strength in manufacturing and other industries besides healthcare. So we're learning from our board members. I think we're on a pretty good path. The other question, and you know, it'd be something to be interesting to hear from you, is when you have had this kind of success, and as you get older in your career, you also want to leave at the right time. You don't want to stay too long. I've seen a lot of executives who stayed too long. And so I think the other challenge to succession planning is, when is the right time to bid farewell and hand the reins over to somebody else? And I can tell you, for me personally, it's just a question I have in my mind. I don't know the answer to that, because I love what I do. And you know, but at the same time, there will be an end someday. I just don't know when, and I'm not sure how to figure that out.
Well, there might be an end there, but I will guarantee you that a whole bunch of organizations that utilize both of you to be help guide them in a number of roles. I think you hit it really perfectly, and I'm going to probably give my own philosophy. I think healthcare messes up succession plan more than they get it right. The board I'm on in Ohio is because the CEO there said, Quint, I've left places. It hasn't worked out well with the succession. I want you on this board because I want you to help with the succession plan. And they have done, seriously, a remarkable job the way they've done it. And going back to you, if you look at research, if an organization is doing well, about 80% of the time they feel the promotion should come from within because they know the culture, they know the consistency, and so on. I just find it's hard sometimes for boards to, they want to say, well, we're going to go do a national search. And the next thing, somebody who's never worked there can look real attractive because they've never worked there. And I've just seen it get messed up. And then the other thing I think has been messed up sometimes. So the person comes in, they don't respect and they don't guard. Now, I can see if the place isn't running well. I know if they're, and people know that. There's people that come in, they have to change it because it wasn't getting good results. But when somebody's getting good results, the goal is not to mess it up. You know, the goal is to guard that brand and look at the culture and, of course, put some tweaks in. But I think you mentioned the word ego, I think, or one time here on this. I think egos get in the way. And once you throw something out, you or trust, because then your thousands of employees, your 12,000 employees say, well, wait a minute. How do we know this person's not going to leave and change it again? So they don't buy in because they don't trust. So I'm with you. I think organizations get this wrong more than they get it right. And I've seen it. I've seen it. And again, I think you'll get it right because you love the University of Kansas Health System. And who doesn't want to make sure that the system they love doesn't continue and continue. So none of you will have, you might retire from the University of Kansas Health System, but you'll never retire from making a difference someday. I guarantee you that because people always need mentors. And I think that's the other thing you've done with your development and your meeting. You know, during the pandemic, one of the things that's really hurt is young leaders aren't getting the mentoring, the networking that they did even in the cafeteria. And you've sort of filled that gap with your consistency throughout the entire process. So I've gone on way more than I normally go on these podcasts because I'm just in awe of both of you. And I hope we're going to give, if you don't mind, we'll give some contact information. Because the other thing I feel that you've always been is selfless with your time. You know, this isn't just about making University of Kansas Health System the best in the country. I think both of you want to make sure every healthcare system creates the type of culture that people want to work and people want to get care and people want to practice medicine. So I'm excited. If I was there, I'd be asking for your autographs right now. So we'll give all a bunch of information for people to get hold of. And I want to thank you for our friendships over the years. I don't take that for granted. I guard our relationship. So thank you so much.
You're kind. And we both value your friendship as well. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Quint. And we're going to need your advice in the future as well. So be ready.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Busy Leaders Podcast, a catalyst for inspired action hosted by Quint Studer. Please subscribe, rate us, and write a review. For more information, visit thebusyleadershandbook.com.